the new cleric. So this in the Shias, actually, this is printed as the 10th cleric. Here we have it, in Orgrimmar over here is the 6th cleric. And there's a bit of a discussion why it should be so. In fact, you have some of the Acheronians point out on the face of it, we haven't even finished dealing with all the dinim of private people's monophys yet. We have many of the dinim of them in the 5th cleric, and we're going to continue with more of them in the 7th cleric, so the stick in the Omer in the middle over here seems all on.
Okay.
All right. It is. You have in Sanhedrin is another example of that, where you have in Mishnayos you have Perak Chela, the 10th Perak, and then Elohanachnokin is the 11th Perak, and in the Gemara it's the other way. Well, in the Gemara it's the other way around. That Hanachnokin is the 10th Perak, and Chelak is the 11th. Yep, starting a new Perak.
Today
should be Tamach Salad. So yeah.
We're
about where we should be.
That's great, because I didn't miss that much.
Okay, good.
I only missed a half a down.
Okay, good. Alrighty. So, yeah, we were about to start. I was just saying that in Mishnayos, this parak is printed as the 10th parak.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So, basically, this parak talks about the Korban Omer. And, in fact, even though the official name of the parak is Rabbi Shmuel, as you'll see at the top of the pages, many of the Rishonim call it parak Omer. Because that's the topic of it.
This is the gun one, I missed that.
Okay. So, Mishnah starts off. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, now it's like this. We know the Korban Omer has to be brought on Tet Zayin Nissen, and because the Korban Sibur, as usual, is brought on Shabbat, it's brought whatever day of the week it is, even if it's Zerich HaShabbat. We're going to talk about at the end of the parak also the idea that preferably, the grain for it is supposed to be as fresh. We're going to talk about it as we go through the parak. Preferably, the grain, the barley for it, is supposed to be as fresh as possible. So therefore, they would have to harvest it the night before. So if Tet Zayin Nissen falls out on Shabbos, that means they're doing the harvesting Friday night. There's a bunch of malachas involving the harvesting, and afterwards the grinding and the threshing and the this and that, and whatever. It doesn't matter, they're all there for Shabbos. But we're going to have to start with an argument in our Mishnah. Is there anything that you do differently if it is Shabbos? So if you small argument, Omer hoya baba Shabbos mishalosh sin. If the Omer is being brought on Shabbos, which Tet Zayin Nissen falls on Shabbos, which by the way nowadays is 10, but nowadays we have a luach, kavur. So if it comes out on Shabbos, then hoya baba Shabbos mishalosh sin. Then what they would do is they would harvest 3 saw of barley, and then they would sift, and then after they threshed it and ground it and whatever, they sift out of it 1 isar. And he saw, 3 saw equals the measurement that the Torah calls an ephah. The omer asiros the ephah. An omer is 1/10 of an ephah. So therefore, what it comes out is what Rabbi Shmuel was saying, that if it's on Shabbos, they would harvest 1 ephah of grain, and then after they finished, enough grain to be able to make 1 ephah of flour or whatever, and then after they ground it and sifted it or whatever, they would wind up with 1 isara in 1/10 of the original of the fine flour, and that's what they would use for the korban omer. We'll learn later on in the parak what they did with the rest of it. On the other hand, if Tet Zayin Nissen falls out on a weekday, so the harvesting is also being done on a weeknight, then they would instead harvest 5 saw. Because the idea is that...
What kind of flour are they doing?
Barley. It's gerith, which is the equivalent of solus from wheat flour. Right. So the point is like this. As the Gemara is going to tell us, it's easier to get, you're going to get a better quality of flour if you start with 5 saw, and then you get the best of the best out of that, than if you start with 3. So the Bishmol will say, if it's a weekday, then you should be doing 5, because that way you'll get the best possible. If it's on Shabbos, then fine, you shouldn't be doing more malacha than necessary. You can get solus or gerith, whatever, out of 3, so therefore just harvest 3. Whether it's weekday or whether it's Shabbos, either way you harvest 3 saw, you don't need more than that. Okay, another machlokas. Rav Chanina Sgana Koyin Maimer. The Shabbos Hayanikta B'Yochid over Magal Echad over Kubah Achas. If Tet Zayin Nissen came out on Shabbos, then they would have, the harvesting would be done by 1 person with 1 sickle to cut the grain, and with 1 basket to put the grain into. Well, the choil, if it was on a weekday, you want to be mefarsim it more in particular, because as we're going to talk about later in the parak, you have the baitrusin claiming that the omer takes place always on Sunday. So in order to be mefarsim, not like them, so normally the mocher Shabbos they held means Sunday, whereas me mocher at the Shabbos is the expression of the
pasuk.
Yeah, me mocher at the Shabbos is the expression of the pasuk. So, if it was on a weekday, b'shloisha, then you have three people doing the harvesting. B'shalosh kopis, b'shalosh magolis, with three baskets and three sickles. This way, there should be more of a piercing for it. And this way, people, it'll be more obvious that we're not listening to the story.
After this year, can you do the story about the three tanoim that were lifted up by the shade in order to get to the melech?
Yeah, we can talk about it. Yeah, remind me about that. Okay, b'chom moment. V'chomer echad Shabbos v'echad Chol. Whether Tetzayin Nissan is Shabbos or weekday, the Shloisha, you always have three people do the harvesting. The Shalosh Kopas of the Shalosh Magolis, you always have three baskets, you always have three sickles, because you always want to be mefarsim. The fact that you're going to have more people do the malacha doesn't matter. The same amount of malacha is going to be done in any case, but the Chachamim don't care if it's done by extra people. Think about story. This Shleimer Rabbanan, I can understand the opinion of the Rabbanan, Kasavi, because when they say in the first part of the Mishnah against Rabbi Shmuel that you always harvest three star, and then from that you get your Yisaren, Kasavi, Yisaren Mokom Yishloish Yisinasi, they hold you can just as well get the best quality Yisaren of flour out of three star, out of three star of barley, V'loishna V'chol V'loishna V'Shabbat, that's the rough. So it doesn't matter whether it's on weekday or Shabbos. Either way, you don't need to harvest more than three. And in fact, you shouldn't, especially because the Tiferes Yisrael points out, practically speaking, after that, you have a whole bunch of activities that need to be done in order for the Omer to be ready. So you want to get things over and done with as fast as possible so that they can get on with the rest of the activities that they need to do as far as winnowing it and threshing it and grinding it and so on and so forth. So the Chachamim holds you don't need more than three star. You can get good quality flour out of that, so that should be enough. But we have to ask, according to Rabbi Shmuel, by Kasavar, what does he hold that he says three on Shabbos and five on weekdays? E Kasavar is starting Mukha like off the element Chomish. If he holds that you can only get the best possible flour for the Korban out of five star after the Shabbos Nami, then even on Shabbos you should be able to harvest five because it's necessary for the Korban. The E Mishalashasi, and if you're able to get an Yisaren out of three after the B'chol Nami, then also on the weekdays you should only be harvesting three. Why is he saying three versus five? Amar Rava, the Rava says like this, Kasava Rabbi Shmuel holds like this, Yisaren Mucher B'loi Tircha Asi Mechamish. It's like this, you to get an Yisaren, to get the best possible Yisaren of barley flour, the way to do it most easily without too much Tircha, without having to sift it again and again, where without having to sift it again and again, Asi Mechamish is you start with five star, and that way you're sure of getting the best possible Yisaren. The Tircha, Asi Mishalish, but with extra Tircha, if you're going to have to sift it more and more times, you could manage to get it out of three. Asi Mishalish, so therefore you can manage the three. So therefore, he says, V'chol Maisin and Mechamish. So if Tetzayin Nissen comes out on a weekday, then we should bring from five, the Hafi Shvicha Milta, because that way you'll have the best possible thing, you'll have the best possible Yisaren. Because this way, Rashi describes what you have is each star, you're only getting the small amount of solus that comes out first.
Not solus, yeah.
Well, Geras is the equivalent. Rashi uses the expression solus, because to all practical purposes, they're the same thing. I mean, one's wheat, one's barley, but it's the same quality, it's the same grade of flour. So,
I wouldn't correct Rashi.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Correct.
So, on weekdays, better you should come from five, and that way you should make it from five, and that way you'll have the best possible. The Shabbos, on Shabbos, he says, better that you should be doing more and more times, the same malacha, where you're going to be sifting again and again, the same three stuff, rather than doing a lot with many different malachas. If you harvest five star to begin with, then you're doing a whole bunch of extra malachas with those two star that you don't really need. You're going to be threshing the whole five. You're going to be winnowing and then picking out the dirt and whatever from two extra star, which you don't need to.
If this wasn't a mitzvah, if you'd be doing the last part, we're just sifting, it would be one chiyuv every time you...
No, well, there's no chiyuv because, I mean, it's a mitzvah, but if it wasn't a mitzvah, yeah, of course, he'd be chayiv individually for each malacha that he does. Oh, you're saying, would he be chayiv individually for each action that he does? It would depend, I guess, whether it's the hell of Mechot or the Baal Eich HaKarbeh, but, yeah.
Is this similar to the problem where you have three fruits on one branch?
We're going to get to that later on at the bottom of Samachal Ramadalas, to hold that thought. Yeah. We're going to actually have, the second half of some of Dalet Amud Aleph is going to be a whole sugya on the details of being Mechal Shabbos in a case, Pikuach Nefesh, or in a case of Mitzvah.
So,
we don't do Menachos. We've been doing plenty of Menachos. Okay. So that's the point, in other words, of the Brach. So Rabbi Shmuel says, therefore, the point is, given that you're going to have to be doing a whole bunch of Melachos with all of this grain that you harvested, better you should be doing the sifting more and more times rather than having to do with each of the four or five Melachos that you're doing or whatever. You're going to have to do an extra amount because of the two extra stuff. Better you shouldn't be doing that. By the way, actually, Moshe points out in one of his Chuvas, he discusses the issue of a doctor who's on call in a hospital on Shabbos for a Pikuach Nefesh situation, and you need to be, for example, when they take blood samples and need to label them with the patient's name, should he maybe be trying to avoid the having to write and do it in some other way? There's a short Chuva on this topic, and he mentions this Gemara over here. He says, the fact is, apparently Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbanan are not arguing on the basic concept that you should have more of one malacha rather than many different malachas. So yes, if you can make it, if in a situation where you'll be doing more of one malacha rather than having to be doing several different other malachas, then that's the preferable way, he says. Similar to what we're saying.
So if it means drawing blood five times instead of writing...
Well, he's not talking about drawing blood. He's talking about, for example, let's say, writing it versus entering it electronically, I think, or something, whatever. So like this, you could have a number of different malachas involved, let's say, by pressing a button versus you could have one malacha involved by pressing a button, let's say, versus a number of different malachas by having to write and then stick it on and whatever. So yeah, something like that. Okay. Omer Rabba, Rabbi Shmuel, Benosha, Rabbi Yechon, Mabreka, Omer Dover Echon. So Rabba points out, Rabbi Shmuel in our Mishnah, and a different Rabbi Shmuel, Benosha, Rabbi Yechon, Mabreka, they're both saying effectively the same thing as far as these dinim of, when it comes to korbanos, things that have to be done with the korbanos, because, which normally would be a malacha on Shabbos, so you're allowed to do it because of the korban, they're saying the same thing that you should be doing less of it, as little as possible. Namely, the Tanya, we learn in a Brisa, Arba Asa Shechaliyah to Shabbos, if the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach, comes out on Shabbos. Now, of course, we know you bring the Korban Pesach even though it's Shabbos. But one of the things that has to be done with the Korban Pesach, you have to strip off the skin. Now, you have to strip off the skin in order to get out the Emorim. Do you necessarily have to strip off the rest of it on Shabbos? So, Makshit as a Pesach Adachalda, no, you only strip off the skin from the Pesach until the chest of the animal. Keep in mind, the animal is hanging upside down. You have it hanging on hooks, or from wooden poles or whatever that they use. What? Yeah, you have it hanging by the legs. So it's hanging with its head down, or where its head was, down, whatever. So you start from the legs, and you start stripping down the skin until you get to the chest. At that point, you've taken off the skin from the area that you need to cut open to remove the emurim, because the emurim are all in the stomach and then lower chest area and whatever. But you don't do more than that, says Rabbi Shmuel. Give it Rabbi Shmuel, but not Rabbi Yechon. The Chachamim actually asks that kula. The Chachamim say no. You strip off the skin from the whole thing. So what's the point? So what do we see? That Rabbi Shmuel, Benosha, Rabbi Yechon, Mabreka is saying over there, Kol Hecha de Esher, wherever it's possible to do a minimum amount of the malacha and not do extra, like this, you don't need the extra done in order to take out the emurim. Then Loi Tachin, we shouldn't be Tereyach to do more on Shabbos. Hachanami, so the same thing. Rabbi Shmuel in our Mishnah seems to be saying the same thing. Kivin de Esher, since it's possible to get the Isara and to get the Omer of flour out of three star rather than five, Loi Tachin, and then we shouldn't be doing five. So they're saying essentially the same thing. However, the Gemara says Mimai. Who says that is a valid way of explaining it? By the way, Tosfos points out, so what do the Chachamim hold in that? Tosfos says, first of all, is there a difference between the Pesach and other Korbanos? Tosfos discusses, maybe not. Maybe we're saying that the Chachamim would say this even by the Pesach, even though it's essentially a Korban Yochid, how much more so the Korbanos Tzibur, because as the Gemara is going to say later, you don't want them lying there like a nevela, like as if you only bothered to strip off half the skin and then you're going to leave it. Also, another possibility is that Rabbanan are saying over here, because the Pesach is basically meant to be eaten. You want to make 100% for sure that none of the meat spoils before you have a chance to eat it. Mashane's and with other carbonates, if it starts spoiling slightly, okay, you still have, I mean, it's being burned on the Mizeach or whatever. It's not, the main purpose of the carbon is not to be eaten. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's a valid comparison between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel ben Yishai Rabbi Yechon ben Breza? Dilma ad kan like Amr Rabbi Shmuel. Okay? Maybe the only reason Rabbi Shmuel over here is saying that you should do only 3 rather than 5, it was like a bizoyan kodshim, because there's no issue of bizoyan of kodshim involved. You do from 3, and it's harder to do, versus you do it from 5, and it's easier to do, fine, but there's no bizoyan of kodshim involved. You're not treating them in a casual way. I will hold them, but over there with the stripping off the skin, it could be zoyan kodshim, there's bizoyan of kodshim involved, that you're going to leave it until the evening like that, half stripped of the skin and half not, and it looks like a nevela.
Looks like that is spoiled quicker, right?
No, but, well, it could, actually, but no, the fact that the skin is on there could make the meat underneath it spoil faster. That's one of Tosis's points. But that's not the point. It still looks like you started and then you just left it to lie there like a nevela. Then it doesn't look as much. Then it looks like you're taking care of it, like you're doing something with it.
But apparently it doesn't spoil so fast when it has the skin off of it.
Yeah, that's the point, because then, like, yeah, because then it doesn't get, then air can get there, and, yeah, exactly.
It doesn't have the, I guess for some reason it spoils faster if the skin is more.
Yeah, because I guess then you have more room for bacteria to do their work, I don't know, whatever. Emalach Rabbanan Tzvirle, so you could argue maybe in that case, Rabbi Shmuel of our Mishnah would hold up the Chachamim of that Braita, about the Karban Pesach. Inami, or you could look at it a different way also. Ad kam like Amr Rabbi Shmuel b'nei Shad Rabbi Yechon b'breika hotam. You know why Rabbi Shmuel b'nei Shad Rabbi Yechon b'breika is saying over there that you shouldn't strip off the skin completely. The fact is, Eladis Avadlai Tzarech Gavoya, because at that point already you've done what you need to for the purpose of the korban, for taking out the Emurim. V'loi Tzarech Achulei Shabbos, you're not going to be, you shouldn't be doing more Chilul Shabbos by taking off more of the skin. Plus, also, Mephoshim points out, Lo Tzarech Achulei Shabbos also means there's no extra malacha that needs to be done at that point for the purpose of burning it on the Mizbeach, burning the Emurim on the Mizbeach. Over here, if you only take 3, you haven't yet done everything that's needed for Tzarech Gavoya, for the korban, because after all, we're saying that it's easier to get it out of 5 without extra sifting. So the extra 2 do participate in the korban. Some part of that 5 is going to wind up in the omer, in the isorin flour that's brought of the korban. And the Tzarech La'achol Shabbos, and anyway, as it is, we have extra malachas that you need to do, even with the 3, because you still need, and regardless, even if you only harvest 3, if you harvest 3 or you harvest 5, either way, you still have a half dozen malachas that you're having to do after that are being Machal Shabbos anyway. Eimah Tirabanans, really. So maybe you could argue that a small B'noshah Rabbi Yechon Mabreka would agree with the Chachamim of our mission. There's no reason for it to be any different on Shabbos and on weekdays. So we can't accept what Rabba is saying, that the two Tanoim are saying the same thing. They both may have completely different svaras. In each case, you have a svara that's specific to that case. Okay. Ela Omer Rabba. So Rabba says, okay, I'll try a different one. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Chaminis Ganakoyim, Amru Dabra Achad. We can say that Rabbi Shmuel of our Mishnah and Rabbi Chaminis Ganakoyim of our Mishnah are both saying essentially the same thing. None, because we continue in our Mishnah. Rav Chaminis Ganakoyin, remember? The Shabbos Nixa B'Yochid. We said that if it's on Shabbos, you only have one person doing the harvesting. B'Mago Echad, using only one sickle. Over Kupa Achat, and with only one basket. Over Chol, and if it's on weekday, B'Shloisha, you have 3 people, B'Sholosh Kupas, or B'Sholosh Magolis, using 3 baskets and 3 sickles. Either way, you're having 3 people doing it, and you're having 3 sickles and 3 baskets. So what's the point? So what do we see? It seems that Rav Chaminis Ganakoyim is saying, in our Mishnah, given the Efshar, since you're able to accomplish the same thing with only one person doing the Malacha, so we're not going to be Matriach to have 3 people be Mechal Shabbos when you can have only one. Hachanami, so the same thing in what Rabbi Shmuel was saying, given the extra, since you're able to accomplish the same thing with only 3 saw, even though, as we said, it's going to take more sifting, loy tochinen, we shouldn't be doing extra tircha of harvesting extra and doing all the other malachas extra. So it seems that they have the same saw. Well, that's as far as the sifting, you're doing more and more. But what Rabbi Shmuel is saying is, again, when you harvest, so you're harvesting 5 versus 3. That means, first of all, you're doing extra harvesting regarding those 2. Then when it comes to the next malacha, you're threshing it, you're also doing for an extra two. And when you're doing the zora, you're also doing to an extra two. And when you're doing bora to an extra two, etc. Every step you're doing extra malacha that isn't strictly necessary. As opposed to when it comes to hakadah, fine. So it's a choice between doing the sifting. We're going to say at the end of the parak that with the omer, I think it says they sifted it 13 times. With 13 sieves, that is. So like this, okay, you'll have to use some of the sieves over and over. Because you have like finer and finer sieves or whatever, yeah. But you'll have to use the same sieve over and over. But at least you're only doing that one malacha over and over rather than having to do all these other malachas again and again.
Otherwise, they're more noticeable, more work.
Well, I mean, all of them are equally malachas. They're all equally among the 39 malachas. That's neither here nor there. Rabbi Shmuel is just saying, better to have to do the hakadah, the sifting of the same three saw over and over, rather than having to do extra harvesting and extra threshing and so on and so forth on the extra two. Right. Okay. So next.
Is the difference between tzeilus and regular flour the fact that it's tender, juicy wheat that makes
sense? No. Well, we are going to talk at the end of the parak. We're going to talk about how many sieves they had to use in order to get tzeilus for the shea lechem versus the omer versus regular menachos. We are going to talk about that. There is a difference in how much tzeilus you get out. That's true. But we're also going to talk about later in the Masechta and the Peis when we talk about where they grew the best quality grain that was used for menachos with the idea that you'll get the most amount of tzeilus out of it. The basic difference between tzeilus and kemach, we're also going to talk about later in the Peis and when we're going to have a parak on this subject, is that kemach is the powdery stuff.
Yeah.
Tzeilus is more like there's more like semolina or something like they sell in the stores.
You let the thing dry out for like 6 months, and then you get kemach. You do it fresh, you get tzeilus. No?
Possible, but not necessarily, because other menachos also have to be tzeilus, and yet they can be brought min hachadosh or min hayashen. They can be brought from old grain as well. And practically speaking, if you bring a mincha before the omer, as we're going to learn later on in our parak, then it has to be from yashan because you can't bring kadosh before the omer, it has to be tzeilus, and hachilah you're not allowed to before the shkei alachim. So
they make tzeilus out of old wheat?
The same way as they make it out of new wheat. It would just be a little harder. You wouldn't get as much tzeilus out of it, but you'd get more kemach. But that's the idea. You have the larger pieces and you have the smaller pieces. The larger pieces are tzeilus. The smaller pieces, the powdery stuff, is kemach. This is when we say in Pirkei Avos, the nafa shemitzia as a kemach, the tzeilus as a tzeilus, you sift the flour in a sieve where the kemach, the powdery stuff, falls out, and the tzeilus, the larger pieces, remain in the sieve. That's the mashal for the type of Talmud who he forgets the irrelevant details and keeps the tzeilus, the good stuff. Okay. So anyway, so the point is, Rabbah is saying now that Rabbi Shmuel and Chaminis Ganakonim seem to have the same svara, that we should be minimizing the amount of Chilul Shabbos, given that we're able to do it with fewer people, or with fewer sons. And again, the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's a valid comparison? Ad Dilma Ad Kan Leka'om Rabbi Shmuel Hacha, maybe Rabbi Shmuel is only saying what he says in his part of the Mishnah, Ela Deleka Pursuming Milsa, because the difference between three and five sah, there's no issue of being a fausim. There's no, you don't have more of a piercing if they're harvesting five sah versus if they're harvesting three. Aval Hossam Deika Pursuming Milsa, but when it comes to the three people versus one people, versus one person, where the point of having three people is that you're being a fausim it, that to know not to hold like the Baiturkin. And look at Rabbanon. Maybe he would agree with the Rabbanon that whether on weekday or whether on Shabbos, you always have three people doing the harvesting.
It doesn't matter really how many people are doing it. It matters how many people are watching.
Well, no, but it also matters how many people are doing it. You have a general concept in Halacha that three people is a piercing. You have, for example, you have various examples of it. You have the din that Mezumin was three people, but also, for example, you have that if three people know about a piece of Lashon Hara, then it's not really Lashon Hara anymore. We'll learn about that in Erechin Beis Hashem. Well, it is tricky, yeah. But you also have, for example, another concept, for example, in Hilchos Yom Tov, that you're sending a present to somebody on Yom Tov, then you're not allowed to have three people send it, because then it's mefarshim, it looks more like you're doing business. But yeah, you have cases like that, where three is considered a person. Actually, it's a fair throw. Actually, it says an interesting verse on the Mishnah, because the Mishnah first starts by mentioning the Magal and then the Kupa, and then it switches around and then mentions the Kupa. So the Magalos, so he wants to say, the idea is, if they were doing it on Shabbos, then they would carry the Magal openly so that everybody can see we're going to harvest the Omer, even though it's Shabbos, it's Bircha Shabbos, as opposed to during the week. They don't need that. They could carry the magel inside the basket. Okay. Anyway. Okay, so anyway, so Rabbi Shmuel, about the 3 versus 5 star, there's no issue of being a Pharisee. Therefore, he might say, so okay, well, there's
that
no issue of Pharisee. No.
Because if they're carrying a basket anyway, you know that they're going to.
Well, this is true, but a basket is something that's not as noticeable.
People carry baskets.
People, no, it's not so much that people carry baskets.
To carry a basket.
Right, but a basket is not something you so easily notice. A magel, you're carrying a magel over there, it's very, very blatantly obvious. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, don't run with scissors. Okay. So anyway, so Rabbi Shmuel might say, when it comes to the amount you're harvesting, it doesn't matter as far as the pirsum. Sure, do less on Shabbos because rather than doing the extra tircha for Shabbos. Aval hosam, the ikka pirsum in milsa, but when it comes to the 3 people versus 1 person, where the whole point of having 3 people is to be mefarsim, not like the sukkim, aim a kerabonon spirale. Maybe he would agree with the rabbonon that you always have 3. And inami, another way of looking at it, ankan lekaomer of chaminas gana koyinim hosam. You know why the chaminas gana koyinim is saying that you have only one person doing it on Shabbos? The ibechad ibeshloisha tzarech gavoyim is abekil chosay. Because it doesn't matter whether you have one person doing it or 3 people. Either way, you're going to get the same amount of grain, and you're going to get the same quality of grain and whatever. You're not adding anything as far as the actual quality of what of the omer that you're getting by having extra people do it. So on Shabbos, you shouldn't have the extra people do it. We'll forego the pirsum in yotza. Aval hacha, but when it comes to the 3 versus 5, deloy is avid kilchot et tzarech gavoya, whereas we're saying if you do things the normal way and don't do the extra sifting, you're not going to get good quality flour if you start with only 3. So therefore, the 5 are needed for, in order to get the korban made properly. Ema kerabonon, clearly. Maybe he holds like the rabbonon and disagrees with Rabbi Shmuel. Well, Rabbi Shmuel is saying it'll be harder. The Chachamim are saying that either way, you're going to get the same quality, you can get a good quality out of 3. So the Rabbanon are saying you can get a good quality out of 3. So therefore, so maybe Rabbi Chanina Yana Koyanim would agree with that you always do 3. You're not going to say on weekdays we're going to try and do it more easily, and on Shabbos we'll have to do it the harder way. Because the point is, he might say you don't want to compromise the quality of the korban because of Shabbos. As opposed to the compromise that there's something else that you can do. The Chachamim.
Why would the Chachamim hold too long?
Because the Chachamim are saying, as we said at the very beginning of the first sentence, the first line of the Gemara, that you're able to get the good Yisod, and whether you start.
It's much more work.
No, the Chachamim are going to hold, so you're going to have to do the same amount of sifting regardless. The Chachamim don't say that it's easier to do out of 5 or something. The Pirsum, that's the thing. So the Chachamim are saying, so that's the thing. You have 2 machloikas in the Mishnah. Rabba is trying to say that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Chanina both agree with the concept that we should try to minimize the Chilul Shabbos. Rabbi Shmuel is mentioning it as far as harvesting less grain, even though it makes it harder to sift. And Rabbi Chanina is mentioning it as far as having one person be Mechalel Shabbos rather than 3. But we're saying not necessarily. Rabbi Shmuel might agree with the Chachamim against Rabbi Chanina that you always have 3 people do it regardless, because Pursuma Milsa is important. And Rabbi Chanina Sgana Koyanim might agree with the Chachamim against Rabbi Shmuel that you always do 3. We're not going to compromise the quality of the soilus, of the flour, because of Shabbos. So it's 2 different machlokes, and where one has nothing to do with the other.
But the other part I can't understand is when it's not Shabbos, according to with other people.
According to the Chachamim, the point is that the Gemara started saying, Kastavri, they hold, Yisorin Mukher, the Shloisha Sinasi, they hold, you can get a perfectly good Yisorin out of 3. So it doesn't matter, Shabbos or weekday, there's no reason to do 5. The Pirsum, that's the Pirsum, that has nothing to do with 3 versus 5, that has to do with 3 people doing the harvesting versus 1 person doing it. You have 2 machloikas in the Mishnah. That's yes. Yeah.
One's about
the amount of flour, and one's about the amount of people. Right. Okay. But no proof that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Chanina agree with each other. Okay. Ela Omer Ravashi. So Ravashi says, here's another way maybe we can make it. We can say, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi, Amudrava Achad. We can say that Rabbi Shmuel of our Mishnah and Rabbi Yosi in a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah are both saying the same thing. Namely, the Tznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Bein Shinir Balil, so we know that the moon is visible on the night of Rosh Chodesh, and Edom comes Beis Din to say that they saw the moon, and Beis Din interrogates them, and if everything checks out, then they're the Mekadosh the Chodesh. So the Mishnah says, now we know the Mishnayas describe over there that the Edom can be Mechal Shabbos to come to Beis Din to give their Eders. Originally the idea is they could be Mechal for any month, after the Chorban they could only be Mechal for certain months, that the Yom Tovim depend on, whatever. The point is that the Mishnah continues, Zayn Shemira Ba'alil, whether the moon was clearly visible, Ba'alil means close, Rashi says Ba'alil means Lachol Olam. Everybody can see it, and the whole world can see it. The whole Olam can see it. Over there in Rosh Hashanah, Rashi explains over there the word Ba'alil means clear and close, whatever. The point is, whether the moon is clearly visible,
the whole world can see it at different times.
Well, whatever. When we say the whole world, we mean people within a certain distance that are external, yeah. Or Ben Shalom near Ba'alil, or whether the moon is not clearly visible, Mechal and all of us are Shabbos. Either way, the Edom can be Mechal or Shabbos to come to Beis Din and give their Edom. Now, you would think, even though it's Ba'alil, it's clearly visible, why should Edom bother being Mechal or Shabbos to travel? Let them figure. People in Yerushalayim will see it. The Beis Din themselves probably saw it. Nevertheless, they're Mechal. Rabbi Yossi says, no. Im nira Ba'alil, ein Mechal, and all of us are Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi says, if the moon was clearly visible, then the Edom should not be Mechal or Shabbos to come to Beis Din. So, what's the point? Milo Omer Rabbi Yossi Hossam. So don't we see that Rabbi Yossi is saying over there, Kivin de Epsher, since you're able to accomplish the Kiddush HaChodesh without Edom coming from far away and traveling on Shabbos, Loi Tarchinen, so we're going to tell them, don't break Shabbos, don't be Mastriach yourself to come on Shabbos, when people in Yerushalayim will just as well have been able to see it. Al-Hanami, so the same thing you could argue over here, Kim de Epsher Loi Tarchinen. Rabbi Shmuel is saying in our mission the same thing, that you're able to get the Isarin out of three saw, so therefore don't be harvesting five. And don't be doing the other malachas for five. So it seems they're saying the same thing. Again, the Gemara says, Mimai, who says that that's a valid comparison? Dilma ad kan like Amr Rabbi Shmuel Halacha. Maybe the only reason Rabbi Shmuel is saying over here that you should do three on Shabbos rather than five, because you have a different consideration that's involved with Eidus HaKodesh. You have a consideration that the Mishnah mentions there in Rosh Hashanah, you don't want to discourage Edom from coming in the future. Right now, it was good. It was Ba'alil, it was clearly visible, but you don't want, and the Mishnah mentions over there an example, that one time, many pairs of Edom, like 40 pairs of Edom, passed through the city of Lud, and Rabbi Akiva was telling them, don't go, you shouldn't all be Mechal Shabbos, because if the moon was that clearly visible that there were 40 pairs of Edom schlepping from Lud to Yerushalayim, it must have been visible in Yerushalayim as well, don't go. And Rabbi Gamliel tells him, you're wrong in that, because in faith, Machshel and Malsit Lava, in the future, another time the moon's not going to be as clearly visible, they're going to see it on Shabbos, and they're going to figure, okay, last time Rabbi Akiva told us not to go, so we shouldn't go this time either.
Wow.
This is also true that you interview all of them, basically briefly interviews all the Edom, so they shouldn't be disappointed and they should want to come in the future. By the way, the Gemara mentions over there, it wasn't really Rabbi Akiva who held them back. The Gemara says it was actually the mayor of the city of Gedder, a fellow named Shezber, that held them back. The Gemara attributes it to Rabbi Akiva because this is Rabbi Akiva's area. He's the one responsible, ultimately. So Rabbi Gamliel actually had, this guy fired. Shalach Rabbi Gamliel, but who did you make the law?
So why does it mention
Rabbi Akiva? Because he was the Rav over there. So
Rabbi Akiva should have appointed better people.
I guess so, yeah.
It's like the Beis Din here had that COL thing and then they had it announced.
Yeah, okay.
They fired
that particular mayor, yeah. Okay, anyway. Okay, so again, the point is, Ad kan like Omer Rabbi Shmuel Hal. So you know why Rabbi Shmuel is saying over here that you should do three on Shabbos instead of five on weekday? Because you don't have this consideration that if you do it differently on Shabbos, then you're going to be machshel people and you're going to cause that they're not going to do it in the future when it has to be done. But in that case, of the Edus HaChodesh, you have the consideration, you have the problem that if you prevent the Edom from going, like Rabbi Yossi is saying, then in the future they may figure it's not worth bothering, and then there's going to come a time when they can't be Mekadosh HaChodesh properly. So maybe Rabbi Shmuel of our Mishnah would hold like the Chachamim over there, that regardless, the Edom go and Amachal Shabbos to come to Beis Din. And you can go the other way around also. Adkan lekam Rav Yosi Hossam eladalaka tzarech gavaya. Again, Rav Yosi can say over there, you know why Edom shouldn't be traveling on Shabbos to Beis Din? Because there's no need for the mitzvah, because the fact is, it is going to be visible in Yerushalayim that particular time. So therefore, there's no need for them to travel. And therefore, he argues, Shabbos there's no permission that time to break Shabbos at all for these Edom, because people can see it and just as well in Yerushalayim. Here, after all, there is a need for the korban, because as Rabbi Shmuel was saying, you don't get good quality flour with less than five unless you do a lot of extra sifting. and Nitna Shabbos Lidachas, in any way Shabbos has been given to be pushed off, because anyway, everybody agrees that you have to harvest three sun, you have to do a whole bunch of malachas in it to make it ready. So anyway you have a heter to be machal Shabbos for this purpose. Eimer Rabbanan, really. So maybe Rabbi Yossi would hold like the Rabbanan of our Mishnah that you go ahead and do three star regardless Shabbos or Wisdom. So again, not necessarily is Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi agreeing with each other.
With regards to the seeing the mood.
Yeah.
People that come from other areas, they know that they're for sure that Yerushalayim can see.
That's the thing. If the moon is clearly visible, it's like high above the horizon, and it's a large crescent, whatever, then we're talking about people. We're not talking about people who live 2 weeks away from Yerushalayim. Anyway, the Rambam describes that realistically, the people who come to give Eidus and Beis Din, generally speaking, so the Mishnah actually mentions over there, the ones who are going to be Mechal Shabbos can only be Mechal Shabbos if they're within a day's journey of Yerushalayim. Meaning that they'd be able to see the moon at the first thing Friday night, right after Shkia. You anyway can't see the new moon for very long after Shkia. They immediately go and start riding or walking or whatever. As long as they're able to arrive in Yerushalayim by Shabbos afternoon, before the end of the day on Shabbos, then they should do that. They should be Mechal Shabbos. If they live further away than that anyway, there's no point in them being Mechal Shabbos because Beis Din is going to have to have close to Eidim to be able to do that. So to answer the question then, if they're that close to Yerushalayim, they're within a day's journey away, then if they can see the moon clearly, they can be pretty sure it's clearly visible in Yerushalayim as well.
So to answer this question, nonetheless, they don't go if it's like way high up in the air.
Well, no, according to Rabbi Yossi, they don't go. That's the point. Yeah. According to the Chachamim, they go either way. And again, the Chachamim, we could say that the Chachamim's reason is because Nimseis and Machshid and Lasid Lavoi, and Rabbi Yossi's reason is he's not concerned about Machshid and Lasid Lavoi. However, in the case of our Mishnah, he would be concerned about it. After all, you have Sarak Gavoya, you have a korban has to be brought, and it has to be brought from the best quality flour. And anyway, as it is, this particular Shabbos is being nidche because of the korban anyway. So therefore, once they're doche for the three, they can be doche for the five. Or rather, according to the Chachamim, rather, we would say, if he agrees with the Chachamim, you're doche it anyway, so there's no reason to do any different Shabbos than we say, is the point. You're gonna do three either way. Okay. So again, no proof so far that Rabbi Shmuel of our Mishnah holds like any of the other Tanur. He doesn't necessarily hold like Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher, Rabbi Yechon ben Breka. He doesn't necessarily hold like Rabbi Chanina Sgana Koinim, and he doesn't necessarily hold like Rabbi Yechon. Okay. So we leave it with that. Okay, we have Rabbi Shmuel's shitta in our Mishnah. We can't equate his shitta with the shitta of any of the other Amidonim. Okay. But now let's talk more about this topic of being Doicha Shabbos for the sake of Korban. Itman. We have a discussion of Amidonim as well. Shochat Shtei Chatoris Chot Tzibur. Suppose a person shechted on Shabbos two Chatoris of the Tzibur. The Rashi, the printed Rashi that we have in front of us describes that the situation is, let's say it's a Yom Tov that comes out on Shabbos. On Shabbos itself, you don't have any Chatoris. On Shabbos itself, you only have, the Musaf of Shabbos is two Olos. So you have the two Olos of the Tamid, and you have the two Olos of, and you have the two Olos of the Musaf of Shabbos. When it comes to Rosh Chodesh and all the other Yom Tovim, you also have Chatoris. The Shchodesh and every other Yom Tov, most other Yom Tovim, you have one Chatos. On Shavuot, you have two, whatever. So suppose, Rashi describes, suppose you have one Chatos, which is supposed to be shechted that day, because, for example, it's Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur or Sukkot or what have you, that comes out on Shabbos, and so you have a third that needs to be shechted for one of the Korbanos of Yom Tov. Fine, that's Docha Shabbos. Then you also have, in front of you, you have a third of Avodah Zarah. So the Tzibur was over, most of the Tzibur was over on the issue of Avodah Zarah, where we learned in Hodias that you have to bring a goat as a chatas. Now that is not Docha Shabbos, because even though it's a korban of the Tzibur, it doesn't have a fixed time. They can just as well do it on Sunday, and just as well do it on Monday. They can do it any time during the week. So it's not Docha Shabbos. Let's say, in this case, he shechted both of them on Shabbos. That's the gears that we have in front of us. The Shittim Kubetis changes it and says that we're just talking about here two animals that are supposed to be shechted for chatois of the Yom Tov. But anyway, the point is, Ve'enet Tzarech Ela Achas, continuing the Gemara, only one of them is needed. So only one of them is for that day's, only one of them is for that day's Korban, the other one is some other one. But he shechted two of them. Omer Rabba Ve'itame Rav Ami, so Rabba, or some say Rav Ami said, Chayev Ala Shnia U'Potter Ala Yishayim. He will be chayav a chatas for having shechted the second one. So he thought he's allowed to shech both of them. He He thought they're both korbanos of tibur. But once he shechted the first one, the second one's not needed anymore. Therefore, he did an unnecessary malacha on Shabbos, so he's kai chafet. Or poser al rishona, but he will be poser for having shechted the first one.
I say that he's
poser. Yeah. Because even what happens if they end, what happens even if they ended up using the second one after all, which Rashi describes, let's say for example, they shechted the first one, suppose they shechted the first one, then he shechted the second one, then let's say before they had the chance to sprinkle the blood of the first one, the blood of it spilled. So now they have to use the second one. So now you would think, well look, after all, they ended up using the second one, he ought to be potter from Achatos. No, he's still chai of Achatos because the fact of the matter is when he shechted the second one, we go according to the time of the shechita. At the time of the shechita, he's supposed to be shechting the first one, not the second. So, the afilu nimsis rishonah chosha. And he continues, even if it turns out, let's say before they shechted the second one, it turned out that the first one is actually a very low quality animal. Now, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to bring the best quality animals as korbanos. We're going to talk about that later in the test, actually. We're going to talk about where they would get
them.
That's a good question. And we're actually going to talk about in a few lines in the Gemara, we're going to talk about nimsa kosher b'bnei me'ayin, that only when you open it up and start looking at the kishkis does it turn out that it's kosher, that's bad quality.
Yeah, so many people with so many animals running around,
Well, no, this is on Shabbos and Yom Tov, so there's not, people aren't bringing their private korbanos because you can't bring them on Shabbos. There aren't that many animals around, but okay, it is, for whatever reason, they didn't notice. Whatever it is. So therefore, so you could argue that maybe once they shechted the first one, and it turns out now that it's a kosher, so it's a bad quality one, it shouldn't really be brought for a korban, so maybe he should be going ahead and shechting the second one. No, nevertheless, we're going to be mechayev him if he shechts the second one, because after all, the first one is kosher, but he hasn't.
The first one, to find out that it's kosher, that's much later on down the...
Well, that's if we find kosher, but name I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, but there is, yeah. Okay, so the question is, Umi Omer Rabba Ochi, should we really say that Rabba said such a thing? Again, we have two versions of whether it was Rabba or whether it was Rabbani that said this. But if we assume that it was Rabba, then we have a contradiction with something else that Rabba said. Omer Rabba, because Rabba also says, Hoy lefonav shtei chatzorot, if a person has in front of him two chatzorot, and in this kind of case, on Shabbos, achas shmeina v'achas kosher, one is a fat, good quality animal, the other one is a skinny animal. If he shechts the fat one and then he shechts the skinny one, then he's chayev for shechting the skinny one because he had no business shechting it. It has no purpose. But if he shechts the skinny one and then the fat one, poter, then he's poter from a chatas, says Rabba. Not only v'diyevet he's going to be poter, we tell him, even after he shechted the skinny one, we tell him, that's no good, you're not supposed to be bringing skinny animals for korbanos, go bring a fat one and shech that. So there Rabba is clearly saying that as long as the second one is better quality than the first one, then you're kosher. Whereas in the first case, he said that it doesn't matter if the first one was shechted and turned out to be kosher, then you're chayev for the second one. So Rabba is contradicting himself. So the answer is, Iboyesei mei kosher mikamaisa. So you have two possibilities. One possibility is in the first case, take out the case about kosher. We said that he's higher for the first one and potter for the second one. We said there's two cases, sorry, that he's higher for both, that he's potter for the first one, higher for the second one. We have two cases. One where even with the scap of the shnir, even where they ended up using the second one as a korban because the blood of the first one spilled. And number two, even if the first one was kosher and the second one was shmeina, one possibility is that part is wrong. Take that part out. And therefore, Rabba's not contradicting himself. If the first one was skinny and then the second one is fat, then he's pack a potter for both of them. Only if both of them were good quality, and the problem is just that the blood of one spilled, and then he had to use the other one, he's still going to be chayav because of the time he shechted it, he wasn't supposed to have been shechting it. That's one answer. Or another possibility. I hear Rabbi Amr. We can say that the first one was said by Rabbi, the second one was said by Rabba. Good, they're Amiroyim. They can argue with each other. Okay. Amalei Ravina L'Rabashi. What about another case? What happens if it turns out, after you shefted the first one, it turns out the first one, it looks like it was a good quality animal. Then when you open it up and start taking out the kishkis and start taking out the inside, then it turns out that it's kosher. That's a bad quality animal. Now the point is, so what happened? The order of things happened as follows. He shefted the first one. Then he shefted the second one. Now they're opening up the first one and they discover inside that it's kosher. So now the question is he chayav chatas for having shechted the second one?
Before knowing, right.
The question is, vasa machshav teyazlinen, do we say we go according to his machshava, the gavral isur of kamachavin? So when he shechted the second one, he had in mind isur, or not, he didn't really have in mind to do an isur, he's betrayed it, he thought it's allowed, but the point is he didn't know that it's necessary for the chatas. He thought that you allowed to shecht it on Shabbos. He didn't realize that the tzibur doesn't need it at that point. So then we would make him chayev. Or he's about the ma'isim as well. Or maybe we go according to his actual ma'isim. In the end, it turned out the first one is kosher. Therefore, you tack and need the second one, and therefore maybe he should be kosher. By the way, Tosfos makes a distinction between the case where the blood spilled, let's say. The difference is, over here, we're talking about kosher b'nei me'ayid. So they didn't know ahead of time that it's going to end up being kosher. Well, the point, not only there's no way to know, no, so actually Tosfos says, suppose that Eliyahu Novi had come to them and told them, you should know this animal is kosher b'nei me'ayin. So they would know not to sheft it. On the other hand, in the case where the blood spilled, they still would have shefted the first one, because they even Eliyahu is not going to tell them in advance, this one is going to end up spilling. So that's the distinction Tosfos says.
Because
in the case where the blood spilled, and therefore they ended up having to use the second one, at the time he shefted the second one, there was no reason to think even, there's no hava, I mean, in the first one the blood is going to spill, the pashtus, we're going to go and finish off with the first one, and the second one is going to be completely unnecessary. Whereas in the case where it turns out to be kosher b'nei me'ayin, we could argue that if we had known at the time, we wouldn't have shefted that one, we would have shefted the second one, and only because we didn't know, then, yes. Well, when we say Yovel Eliyahu, we mean, in other words, to put it in modern terms, say we're able to do an x-ray on it or something and find, you know, the idea is, in other words, in principle, it's something that could be discovered, because something that existed now, as opposed to the blood spilling is something that didn't happen yet. And it might happen, it might not.
Well, someone knows that it wasn't walking slow, it wasn't healthy.
Yes, okay.
Had a cane.
Okay, so, well, no, in that case, then that would be the previous case, of course, but, okay. So that's the question. In this case, where, again, he shechted the first one, then he shechted the second one, then they opened up the first one and discovered that it's kosher. Now do we say he's kosher for the second one? Amale, Rav Ashi answers him, Lav Hainu de Rabba v'Rava. Isn't this essentially the same machloikas as Rabba and Rava have in a different case, whether you go according to the Machshava or according to the Maita? Namely, the Ishmael, because we have a discussion between Rabba and Rava as follows. Shama Shatova Tinekayam, suppose a person hears that a baby, that a child is drowning in the sea, Oparas Matsuda Lahalis Dogim, he meanwhile is spreading out a net in order to catch fish, so not specifically for the purpose of saving the baby. The hell of Dogim, if he catches fish, Chayev, then of course he's Chayev, because he did the Malacha of Sod, but Lahalis Dogim, but if he puts in the net in order to catch fish, the hell of Dogim Matinik, suppose he ends up catching not only fish, but also the kid, Rava Amachayev, Rava Amapotas. So Rava says he'll still going to be Chayev Achatas, and Rava's going to be saying that he's Potter from Achatas. On the side of it, here in Hagos Tzionim, it says maybe the Gyusa should be the other way around. Rava says he's Potter, and Rava says, actually, it's not the same thing, not changing around the opinions, but changing around the order of them. Rava is the next generation after Rava. So we should be putting Rava's opinion first. Okay, anyway, so Rava says Potter, Rava says Chayim.
It's kind of like Ezel and Nesheh, where the value, I charge you 20% interest, but the value of money goes down by 20%, and so there's an opinion that I'm not chayav.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
I suppose. Okay. So, yeah. Okay, so the point is, so we have Rava who says that he's chayav, seems to be going according to his machshava. He intended to catch fish, so even though he ended up getting the kid, we go according to his machshava, he's still chayav.
when he heard of the kid that he wanted to be one.
No. What we're saying over here is that at least for purposes of the assumption, the Gemara is assuming, but now we're going to say in a second that when he put in the net, he wasn't necessarily intending to get the kid out. Well, no, he said shama chinik liyam. But we're saying he put the net in now. We're saying no, the net was already in there. Then okay. So Rava is saying he's chayav. Apparently, Rava holds you go according to his machshava. And his machshava was to catch fish. He didn't have a machshava to catch the kid. Rava is going to say the fact is he did pull out the kid, therefore he's going to be potter because it was a matter of pikuach nefesh.
But when did he put it in? You just say he put it in only because he heard the kid there.
No, but he put it in after he heard that the kid, but he wasn't necessarily. But wait, but ad kan Rava loyka potter. Now even Rava, who's saying that he passes, is only given the shama because the fact is, since he heard that there's a kid in the water, amina nami daitiatunik. So we say even though primarily he's intending to catch fish, we can say that he probably also has in mind to catch the kid. Ava lo shama loy. But if he didn't hear that there was a kid at all, then it sounds like even Rava would agree that he's hired.
Of course, obviously.
Well, no, the point is, in other words, that if we're talking about he didn't hear that a kid was drowning, but he put in his net and he ended up catching the kid without even knowing that a kid is there, it sounds like Rava would make him hired. Why is Rava saying he's positive? Because he heard that there's a kid there. So therefore we can say he had a double machshava in mind when he put in the net. He wants to catch fish, but he also intended, by the way, let me try to save the kid. So at least he saved the kid, then you can argue he's potter. But if he had no intention to save the kid at all, because he didn't even know that there was a kid there, it sounds like Rava would say that he's chayim. So it sounds like Rava and Rava are arguing about the matter of machshava versus Naisa. Rava is going to go according to his machshava, since in that case his machshava was to what his machshava, you can say, included the kid also. So you can say, therefore, he's potter because in the end there was a machshava to include the kid, and the maisa included the kid. And Rava is going to say it doesn't matter. The fact that the machshava was mainly about the fish, therefore even he pulled up a kid, he's still going to be chayev.
When machshava is about the fish, that's when he didn't hear about the kid.
That's when he didn't hear, right. So therefore it should seem to be the same machlokes. Rava should say that he's potter, and Rava should say that he's chayim. The ikka d'amri, or another version that Ravashi tells him, amalei hainu kloktayer d'Rava v'Rava. Again, in the second version, he says it's the same machlokes of Rava and Rava. The itma, where we have another related discussion. If he didn't hear that a kid is drowning in the ocean, and you have two different girsos, if you hear shama or loy shama, Rashi takes out the word loy and says that the girsa is shama, that he heard that a kid is drowning, like in the first example. Rashi says in this second version it won't really matter as far as the actual bottom line halacha, it won't really matter whether he heard or not. You have other Rishonim do have the Girsa Loi, and in particular the Rambam deals with this halacha, and the Noitza Kalim and the Rambam talk about that apparently the Rambam had the Girsa Loi in our Gemara. So if he didn't, not like Rashi. Rashi says it doesn't really matter, but he has the Girsa Shama, the Rambam apparently had the Girsa Loi Shama. Anyway, Shatova Chinik Vayam, that a kid is drowning in the water, Oparas Masuda Lahalis Dogim, again he spread out a net to catch fish, the hell of dogim, and he ended up catching fish, chayev, then for sure he's chayev, because he intended to catch fish, and that's what he actually did. Lahal is dogim, the hell of tunic for dogim, but in the second version, if he intended to catch fish, and he ended up catching the fish and also the kid, Rabba om a potter, Rabba om a chayev. There in the second version, Rabba is going to say he's potter, and Rabba says he's chayev. Because Rabba Amapato Zilbos of Maisav, Rabba says he's going to be potter because he ignored his machshava altogether. It doesn't really matter whether he heard that there was a kid drowning or not. Either way, the bottom line is the Maisav was he ended up picking up a kid. So he saved a life. He did Pekorach Nefesh. Therefore, he's potter. But Rabba Amachayev Zilbos of Machshava, whereas Rabba says he's chayev because he would go according to his machshava. Even though he ended up catching the kid, the fact is he didn't intend to. He intended to catch fish. So therefore, we can't capture him because of the kid. The fact is he saved a life. But he's still going to be chayav a chatos. He's still going to be chayav a chatos or whatever for breaking chatos.
Why chatos?
If it was Bashayim, then it happened. If he thought you were allowed to fish on Shabbos, it was amazing. It was Eidim Batra, obviously.
I hear this guy has a mitzvah or something that there's a kid in the water, and every Shabbos he goes,
Sure. Okay. The halacha is like Rabba over here, and therefore the halacha is that, yes, even if he didn't know that there was a kid in the water, and he goes fishing on Shabbos, and he ends up pulling a kid out of the water, he's potter. He's potter machata. Because he goes according to his meister, right? Okay. So anyway, so the same thing would be as far as the two korbanos over here. That
the fish has to go back inside.
Maybe not. I mean, they might be also the fish here also. I don't know. That's a good question. Okay. Anyway, so the bottom line is the same thing over here. When it comes to the two korbanos, you discover after you shechted the first one, and after you shechted the second one, rather, that the first one is kosher b'mnei me'ayim. We would say if one's a rabba, then he's kosher for having shechted the second one, because you go according to his ma'isa, and the fact is we do end up needing the second one, because the first one was because the first one was kosher b'mnei me'ayim.
Even though he only shechted the ma'isa later on.
Right. Even though it was machshava at the time, when he shechted the second one, he had no idea that the first one's no good. Nevertheless, yes. Okay. Another din, Omer Rabba, suppose you have a sick person on Shabbos, where the doctor, who is the case you were asking about before, the doctors have evaluated and found, by the way, for those of us who learned three Prakim of Rambam, this was in three Prakim a few days ago. Anyway, all of this, this whole story was, yeah. Okay. So if you have a sick person who the doctors have checked him out, and they found if he eats one fig, then that'll be enough to heal him. The rotsu asara bnei adam beediu asara grogus v'asachas. 10 people all went running in different directions, and each one brought one fig all at once. Turn him. Then they're all potter from the issur of chilul shabbos. Afila b'zachazeh. And even if they came one after the other, because they all intended to do the mitzvah, because as Rashi says, you have to go as fast as possible when it comes to the korach nefesh. You don't wait to ask or whatever. You just go and do. Yeah, they all left at the same time, Pashas. Or it could even be they left one after the other, but like the first one left and the second one left before the first one came back or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's going to take them. Yeah. Afilu kodam the Hebrew Bereshina, and even if he actually had to eat the first one and now he's feeling better, and so it turns out that the other nine were completely unnecessary, nevertheless, they're not Mechal Shabbos, and in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it says they get a prayer from Hashem because they all were trying to do B'kor HaKadosh. Okay. Boy, Rava. So now Rava asks, here's a question in this connection. Suppose the doctor said that the patient needs two figs. Now you have like this. You have on a nearby tree, you have two figs that are each one growing on a separate stem. So if you pick them, you're going to have to do two malachas of picking, one. The sholosh v'oifasachat, you have another place on the tree where you have three figs hanging from one stem. Kaminayu maisin, which one should be the one that we bring? Do we say shtayim maisin and bechazule? Do we do two because he only needs two, even though that involves doing extra malacha, because it involves doing the malacha of kosher twice? Oy doma sholosh maisin, and maybe we should bring the three to come a matzah ksida, because we're doing less ksida, we're doing less harvesting then.
Before,
right? So it's similar to the case of omission. That's why we're bringing it up here, yeah.
In the meantime, he's thinking about this, we can't die.
No. Obviously, if we're talking an emergency situation we're talking about where there's time to consider the pros and cons. And by the way, you have other cases like that in halacha also. You have other cases where it's pikuach nefesh, but there's enough time to do some triage or whatever to figure out the situation. You have cases that it talks about in halacha, for example, the patient needs meat on Shabbos. Should you feed him nevelo, or should you feed him nevelo that might be available right now, or should you shecht an animal for him? You have all kinds of cases like that. An interesting one that I saw about a case, for example, where a woman has to go on to the hospital on Shabbos to have a baby. So you have a case, for example, over there where she had, let's say, all of her paperwork already exists at one hospital, but it's further away versus another hospital which is closer, where they're going to have to start all over. Better take her to the further away hospital. Same idea as we said before. Better to be doing the same malacha again and again rather than have to be doing a lot of extra malachas. So the Gemara says, Shita, obviously the answer must be Sholosh Maisinin. We bring the stem that has the three figs on it. the Ad Kam, like Ha'amar Rabbi Shmuel Hassan, because after all, even Rabbi Shmuel in our Mishnah, who's saying that your harvest less when Tes Zayin Nissan is on Shabbos, why did he say over there that you should do 5 on weekdays and only 3 on Shabbos? Elo Jekim and Mayas Ba'achila from a Mayas Tira. Because you're harvesting less tzvua, and you're also at the same time you're doing less of the malacha, and you're ending up with less product. Aval hocha the kikam ma'at achila kamachet tira. Here you're going to end up with less product, but you're doing more malachas in the course of it because you're doing 2 different pickings. So there's no question, even if one's Rabbi Shmuel, there's no question you have to bring the 3, because better you should be doing the malacha as little as possible. And that in fact is the halacha, that in that case you pick the one that has the 3. Let's do a little more, yeah.
I have to go home.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. So we'll continue a little bit. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, the ideal way of bringing the omer is it should be brought from the grain that's closest to Yerushalayim, for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara. Loy bikar akar of Yerushalayim. If the grain, if the barley grown closest to Yerushalayim didn't mature enough yet, maybe an ocean would come off, and then they can bring it from anywhere else in Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, ma'isa shabah omer megagas tzufin. It happened once that the omer was brought from a place called Gagas tzufin, which is far away from Yerushalayim. And the Sheh Lechem that year was brought from the valley of Ein Socher, which is also elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael, far away from Yerushalayim. Tzufin, they say, might be near Kfakabad nowadays. There used to be an Arab village there called Tzufin. There still is an army base there called Tzufin. Ein Socher, they say, might even be near Shechem, whatever. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. The Gemara says, my timer, why should it be brought from the closest to Yerushalayim? Ibarisem mishum karmel. One reason is because the pasuk says that the korban has to be karmel. Karmel is short for the word rach and mal, which means that it should be soft, where it can be easily crushed between the fingers. Rashi, the printed Rashi over here says mole, but that's actually a mistake. It's supposed to be mal. So the point is, so karmel, rach or mal, the grain should be as soft as possible. And therefore, so if you bring it from further away, meanwhile it gets hardened on the way because the wind blows on it and whatever, and it's not as fresh. So that's one reason. The very same, mishum de ein ma'avir and al mitzvah. Another reason is because you shouldn't pass by the opportunity to do a mitzvah. So you're leaving Yerushalayim to find a barley field. You should be going to the closest one rather than passing it by and doing it from someplace else.
Even if it's a better quality, or
if it's better quality, that's something else. But we're saying apparently we're talking about if it's good quality near Yerushalayim. Okay. Then we said Ma'isa Shabal Omer Megagas Tzufin. We said one time the Omer was brought from a place called Gagas Tzufin, and the Shalech and that year were brought from Bikas Ein Socher. So what happened that this had to happen? Turn up on them. We learn in a brayta. Pshesoru Malchei Beis Chashmonoi Zel Zeh. When the kings of the family of Chashmonoiim were besieging each other. Their name is the Vahayafurkinos Mevachut, Aristobulus Mevachnim. Aristobulus and his army on the outside of Yerushalayim, and Aristobulus and his army inside Yerushalayim. They were two brothers. They were the sons of Yanei HaMelech and Shlomzi and Amalka. So Shlomzi had been queen for after her husband died for 9 years, and it was a very prosperous and good time for Eretz Yisrael. After she died, the two of them got into a civil war, which one should be the next king?
Yeah, that's a bad one.
The bad one. The upshot of it is that they ended up getting the Romans involved, and once the Romans came, they didn't leave, basically. So this is, we're talking over 100 years before the Korban, but that's when the Romans first came, before the second Korban.
Why isn't this a fact, eh?
Good question. Well, when we say over here, when we're going to say that so that they couldn't bring the Talmud, that might be Bottle of Talmud. That might be one of the things that we do on Shiva to the Talmud, that Bottle of Talmud. Anyway, every day the people inside Yerushalayim would send down a basket full of dinarim, of coins, or malam and tzmidim, and the people outside would send them up animals for the tzmidim.
These are yidden.
Yidden, they're all yidden.
They're fighting, they're telling each other about the meantime.
But they all understand. However,
they all agree that the
Korban has... Yeah, they all agree. However, inside Yerushalayim there was one old man who knew Chochmas Yevonis. Chochmas Yevonis, in the Pharshim explained, is, it doesn't just mean the Greek language. Many people in those days spoke Greek. It meant some kind of symbol, some kind of sign language or symbolic language or whatever like this. You could say something, you could send a message to somebody else without the people around you understanding, unless they also know the secret code, what it means, what you say.
It was like encryption.
It was sort of like encryption or like maybe semaphore flags or whatever it was. It was something
like
where...
Like the Germans had and they cracked the code.
Yeah, that's something like that, for example. Whatever it was some kind of code that only people who knew Greek literature and whatever, yeah, it could have been something similar. It's a fine language,
by
whatever.
By the way, that's why you can't learn
Chochmas Yevonis. That's what I mean. Wait, yeah. Amalehem, this person signals to the people outside, so Hukinus' army, calls man shas hukin ba'avoda, as long as the people inside are involved with doing the avoda and the mishnah, they're never going to be given over into your hands. If you want to beat them, you have to find a way to stop the avoda. L'machar shur shalahem dinurin b'kufa, so the next day they sent down the basket full of dinurin, the helu b'hem chazir, and the people outside sent up a pig. Kivin shi gi l'chatzit choyma, when it came to the middle of the wall, they're pulling it up, not the cone of Bachoma, the pig stuck its hooves into the wall, like the way a chazir does that, like when you try to drag it along, it digs its hooves into the ground. So like here, they're dragging it up the wall, so it's stuck in its hooves.
But that's strong enough to break a cement.
No, because it was enough to break anything, but beneath Zaza, Eretz Yisrael, Arameas Parathal, Arameas Parathal, the whole Eretz Yisrael, 400 by 400 parashas, struck with an earthquake, to show how upset Hashem is at what happened over here, that the people outside should have the chutzpah to do that. By the way, the idea about the pig, Marshall mentions, this Gemara is brought in three places in Chas, this story. Marshall mentions in one of the other places, in Sota, I think, that we know that the pig is a symbol of Edom, or the Romans, and therefore the pig sticking its hooves into the wall represents that the Romans are going to be soon sticking their hooves and sticking their nose into Jewish business, which Taka happens. Ben Yoyada also adds the idea, we know the famous thing, the pig is also a symbol of the Ech of the Pev, Ech of the Lev, the hypocrite who sticks out his hooves to claim that I'm kosher and really he doesn't chew his cud. So it represents the idea over here that they had a problem with these kind of people, with these people who aren't on the inside, what they seem to be on the outside. This is Zaken Echad. What's this guy coming over to the wall over there and signaling to the people and nobody stopped him? Apparently, they must have figured he's a distinguished person. He's Mestama Tanakhokam. But unfortunately, like this, he's using his abilities to, yeah.
And he was inside.
And he was inside. That's the point. Mestama, the people inside, didn't suspect him of anything. Yeah. Anyway. At that point, the Chachamim said, "Order she yigadu chazir." From now on, cursed is a person who raises pigs. The truth is, midaraisa is also anyway to raise pigs for a living. You're not allowed to do business with things that are also. But here we're saying, even if a person does it in ways that would be awesome, that would be most of an asura still, yeah. But order she lamed b'nayis chachmas yivanis, and also cursed is a person who teaches his children this chachmas yivanis, the sign language or whatever it is, yeah. Tosfos discusses a little bit about the pros and cons of that. Anyway, aren't you not allowed to learn it because you're supposed to be spending your time learning Torah? Were there different zeros about it at different times? If you had to go speak to the king, yeah, it mentioned in Baba Kama. But actually, yeah, the Gemara mentions in Baba Kama, if you're craving the Malchus, if you're close to the government, and therefore you need to know Chochmas Yevonis, because it's part of the culture over there, then you're allowed to. It says the Chochamim allowed the family of Rav Gamliel to learn this Chochmas Yevonis because they needed it for government business. But ordinarily not. Greek, there's Greek and there's Chochmas Yevonis. There's two different things. To learn Greek was commonly spoken in those days. Chumash and outlawing that. They're outlawing this Chochmas Yevonis, the secret Greek code or whatever. Okay. It's about that time that we learn in our Mishnah Maitha Shabbat Megagas Tzifrin Ushtei Alechem Vikasein Tzifrin. It was that time because all the fields around Yerushalayim had been destroyed by the armies. So therefore, that was the time when they had to bring the Omer from far away. In fact, Maushal says it may not have just been that they accidentally destroyed them, as armies often do. It may be that they destroyed them purposely. The same way as they stopped the Talmud and sent up the Chazir instead. The same way they may have figured, though the army outside, let's stop them from bringing the Omer, let's stop them from bringing the Shtei Alechem, and that way we'll have an easier time winning over them. So therefore, they would have deliberately destroyed the field, and therefore they had to go all the way to Gagas, Tzrifin, and to Ein Sof again.
You guys also have no good mix.
Neither side were really good. We're really good mix, yeah.
Okay.
Well, when Shlomsky was alive, yeah, then she's the queen, so yeah, she's her mother. Well, yeah, I mean, the truth is, actually, Josephus describes in his history how towards the end of her life, one of these sons, Aristobulus, started threatening her that if you don't give me such and such, that I'm going to lead a rebellion against you. So whatever, he was a no good Nick before that. So both of them were no good Nicks in the end. Okay, let's finish off the story. When it came time to bring the Omer, they didn't know where we were going to bring the Omer from. All the fields around Yerushalayim have been destroyed. Achlidu, so they announced. Does anybody know where those barley growing? Also, Ahu Chausha, a certain mute person came along. Or Rashi says actually the other way around. He's mute. He could hear, but he couldn't speak. Oisiv Chode Yoda Igra, he put one hand on a roof of a house nearby. V'chode Yoda Astrifa, and then he put his other hand on a hut. A strif, whatever, is like a hut with a peaked roof. Like they'd use them for hunting, they'd use them sometimes, they'd use them for different other purposes, whatever. So he puts one hand on a roof, and one hand on a strip, gag and strip. Almost who Mordechai, so Mordechai says to them, now Rashi says it's the same Mordechai from the story of the Megillah. Tosfos says that's impossible, the story is almost 300 years later. So Tosfos says, what it is, we're going to say later on, that there were certain memunim, there were certain people in charge of different jobs in the Beis Mikdash. Mordechai was the first one to have a particular job, ala kinin, as the Gemara is going to say later, we'll talk about tomorrow, Baruch Hashem. And all the ones after him were all called Mordechai after that, even though whatever their name was, they were given at their bris, they were nicknamed.
Mordechai's later.
So according to Tosfos, we're not talking the original Mordechai from the time of the Megillah.
The
time of the Megillah is 300 years before the story.
Before the story.
So therefore, we have to be talking.
Because of one of the Romans on
TV. Right. So therefore, we have to be talking about, says Tosfos, that what you had is Mordechai was the first one when the second Beis Mikdash was built. He had this job, al-Hakinin, as the Gemara is going to talk about later. Later on, he passed away and somebody, al-Hakinin is to be in charge of when people bring money for bird carbonus, and there can be a lot of mix-ups. So Gemara, we'll talk about it later, but at this point, we'll finish up the story and then we'll leave it for tomorrow, that's the chance. So then it was the same person. They called him Mordechai because he has the qualities of the original Mordechai. He's Bali Seichel Mada. He's a smart person. Anyway, so this is a Mordechai said to them, Mi ikaduchte the shmog gagas strifin a strifin gagas. Is there a place? Apparently the guy is pointing to gag and he's pointing to a strif. And then Yehoyada adds, he was pointing to them many times. He's pointing over and over to a gag and over to a strif. So therefore Mordechai realized that must be in the plural. Gagas strifin or strifin gagas. Is there such a place in Eretz Yisrael? Sure enough, they went and found there that sure enough, there is a place called Srippin, Gaga's Srippin, and there they found barley that they've been able to protect.
He reached up there.
Yeah, houses weren't always that tall in those days. Could be pointed, could be whatever. Marshall says, one, why was a mute person? Fact of the people of Gaga's Srippin didn't want to send somebody who can talk. What if Hukinus' people or the Romans or whatever capture him and then force him to tell the secret, and that Stan Barley is also going to be gone. They send a mute person this way. They realize that only Mordechai in the Jewish line is going to be able to crack the code, which he did. Yeah, that's true. Also, the whole problem was brought about through sign language. So this guy helped them out with sign language. True. Yeah.
He was one of them.
No, so this person, this mute person, came with a message, and therefore they were able to send messengers to Gaga's Stupin, and sure enough, they found Barley over there.
Had they go out of the war?
Oh, so by this time, I guess the siege was over. I don't know. I guess, I don't know. No, that was, the siege was before that. The fighting was before that. I guess by the time Pesach came, the fighting was over, but all the fields had already been destroyed. Comes later that year, comes Shavuot. They need to bring the Shtelachem. Again, they don't know where to find a week for the Shtelachem. Again, they made an announcement. Also, who Gavra Chausha, again, a mute person came, maybe the same one, maybe a different one. Oisiv Yode A'ene B'chode Yode Asichra. He put one hand on his eye and the other hand on his sichra. Rashi says that the sichra is the socket in the door. When you bolt a door shut, you have a hole in the wall that the bolt goes into. That's called sichra. Tosfos mentions a couple of other possibilities. It can mean a caver. It can mean a dam in a river. Whatever. Yeah. So whatever it is, Omalu Mordechai, so again, Mordechai realized what he's trying to hint at. Umi ikaduchta b'shma ein soicher o soicher ayin. Is there any place in Eretz Yisrael named ein soicher, the eye of soicher, or soicher ayin? But kubashkuchu, sure enough, they checked there and they found their wheat that was safe and they were able to bring the shelach in there. And by the way, Marshall adds one more detail. He says the names of these places are significant also. They called it Gaga's Strippin because actually what they did is in order to make sure that this barley stays safe and doesn't get taken by the Romans or Hurkan of the people or whoever, they covered it with tzifin. They covered them with little conical huts. So this way, it'll be hidden and these people won't notice. The same thing, ein tzircher, meloshin tzircher, they closed it up. They kept it locked up so nobody accidentally comes in and takes it.
Now that we've talked about pigs and tzedukim, can you tell us a story about the...
Okay. So which story was it again? Oh, about the three chachamim, yeah. Okay, so what is, so you have the story over there, the Yerushalmi tells it, it's told in Bereshit Rabba at the end of Parashat Torah. There was a guy, the yeshiva, the Beit Medrash of the Chachamim in the time of Amoraim was in the city of Tveria, and one time there was a guy by the name of Diklut who was grazing his pigs near there. He was a pig herder and he was grazing his pigs near there. The Talmidei HaYeshiva came out and beat him and threw him out of that area, because what are you doing with your pigs near our Beit Medrash? Eventually, many years passed, he joined the army, whatever, he went up and up in rank. Eventually he becomes not just plain old Diklut, he becomes Diklutinus, whatever, Diocletian, the great Roman emperor. So now he decides, now he figures, I have my chance, I'm going to revenge myself on the Chachamim. He goes to the city of Banyas, in the north of Eretz Yisrael, Banyas, they call it nowadays. It's one of the sources of the Yarden. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful area to visit. Anyway, he sets up his headquarters over there. He sends a message to the Chachamim. He tells the messenger, make sure you arrive there right before the Shabbos, that you have to present yourself to me in Panias first thing Moshe Shabbos. Now, they're not going to travel on Shabbos, so therefore, now he has an excuse to punish him. So, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, who was the Nasi at that time, gets the message, and of course, he's extremely worried. What's going to happen? This is Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, or maybe the great-grandson, whatever, some one of the later generations. Anyway, he's extremely worried. And he has to prepare for Shabbos. He goes to the bathhouse for Shabbos. And he and Shmuel ben Achmeni over there are in the bathhouse. And you have the shed over there, that hangs around the bathhouse is having a grand old time of laughing and dancing or whatever. And Shmuel ben Achmeni says, you chutzim, yeah. Don't you realize that we didn't are in trouble? What are you doing? Being so careful. Why? What's the matter? They tell him what happened. You go ahead and have a pleasant Shabbos. Have a good Shabbos. Don't worry, I'll take care of things for you after Shabbos. After Shabbos, the shed picks them up and flies them off to Pinus. So they're outside the gate. Guards come and tell Dr. Pinus that the Jewish rabbis are here. Okay, lock the gate. Don't let them in. You still want Shabbos excuse to punish him. So the shed picks them up and carries them over the wall. Okay, Dr. Pinus says, fine, I wasn't able to keep them out of the city. Listen. Before they come to visit me, the great Roman emperor, who used to be a pig herd, they have to go bathe in the bathhouse. Tell them that they can't present themselves to me till they go to the bathhouse. Meanwhile, you guys heat up the bathhouse extra hot. That way they'll go in there, they'll be burnt. Well, so they don't know about the plot. They go over there and they're going to the bathhouse. They still have the shed with them. This shed has been hanging around bathhouses all the time. He knows how these things work. So as they're, so you have hot, really, really hot boiling water in there. Meanwhile, the shed is bringing in cold water from the stream to cool it off. So they had a nice comfortable bath, and they got dressed, recovered it, and they came to for their audience with Dr. Titus. Okay, he didn't have a choice. He has to see them now. He doesn't have any more excuses. Listen, he says, you think just because your God can do miracles, can do this thing for you, that you have the right to go and insult the Roman emperor? When did we ever insult you? Did you remember all those years ago when I was Diklut the pig herder? Okay, Diklut the pig herder, we would beat up and make fun of and whatever. We would never do that to the emperor. So, okay, he says, listen, you know what? I'll be a nice guy. I'll be nice for you because after all, you didn't know. But from now on, you should keep in mind something. Never insult a little guy or a little snake because you never know when they grow up. They have power, and you never know what they could end up being.
And then what happened with the tzedukim?
There were no tzedukim in that story.
What about they found the tzedukim were praying to an idol?
That's a different story.
Same
story. Yeah, different story. So that's the way it ended up being good. And in fact, Diocletianus was one of the better emperors towards the Jews during his period. The Yerushalmi also tells another thing about him actually later. The Yerushalmi says at one point during his reign, he decided he wanted to be worshipped as a god, like many of the Roman emperors did. So he ordered that all the, actually that's, this is the thing that you're mentioning. So he ordered that all the nations in the empire are obligated to make him, to consider him a god and to pour out nesachim of wine in his honor, except the Jews. Now, not the Tzidukim, but the Shomrim, the Kutim, could have used that as an excuse. They could have said, look, we're Jews also, we should also be exempt of it. But they didn't. They wanted to show we're super patriots, we respect the emperor or whatever, so they went ahead and did Nisuch in his honor. At that point is when they made that yain, that wine of Kutim is offered. Okay. Yain Nesach. Yeah. For that reason, because they could have used that excuse. So Diocletianus exempted the Yidden from this Zera, but and the Kutim could have argued we're Yidden also, but they chose not to, and therefore the Chacham said that's it, their wine is Yain Nesach. Well, in the end, what happened to them, Josephus describes how eventually they both, Aristobulus was captured and taken to Rome, and he escaped a couple of times, and in the end, he got assassinated, and Hyrcanus also eventually got killed by Hyrcanus. It's a long, long and rather sad thing, but, yeah.
And he was both sides were stuck in
the... Yeah, they were stuck with the Romans at that point, and eventually the Hyrcanus, and yeah.
How did
they
end up with
Well, it was common enough in those days. Even from Yidden often had Greek names. You have Antigonus, Well, there's that, but also a lot of times it was also very, at least among the family of the Hashmonaim, very often you find they had a Hebrew name and they had a Greek name. Just like nowadays, you have Frum Jews who have an English name and a Hebrew name. So they had, Aristobulus, his Hebrew name was Yehuda. Hyrcanus, his Hebrew name was, I want to say Elazar, but I don't remember actually. But he had some Hebrew name, and he also had for legal purposes and for government purposes or whatever, he went by the name Hyrcanus.
Why does the rabbi tell us that we should use a Jewish name as these great scholars?
Well, it's not exactly like Hyrcanus and Aristobulus are good role models.
No, but we have.
So in the case, for example, Antigonus or Stetha, we don't know if he had a different Jewish name. You know, that may have been his name that he was given at his grave.
Oh.
We don't know. Yeah.
Can't remember that he's not just had Stephen having...